that didn't get your patriotism started, nothing's gonna. It's been fun to be back in the Midwest around the 4th of July and all the celebrations. There's something more of an enthusiasm here than we found out on the coast. This last week, I took a little time as Kathy was out of town, and I was watching, I had the television on more than watching it, but a show on cable caught my attention that took a look at what happened to the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence. Almost all of them, as you probably know, paid dearly for putting their name on that document. Every one of them was officially declared a traitor. They were hunted men, so they had to go into hiding, away from their families. 9 died of wounds or because of other hardships that the war gave them, the war triggered by their declaration. 5 of them were captured and endured exceptionally brutal imprisonments. In several cases, when they couldn't be found, their wives or sons or daughters were jailed and mistreated, persecuted, and in a few cases even killed. One of the signers, who did himself survive, lost all of his children during the war, and in a very close call had to flee from his wife's deathbed to avoid capture. 17 of those who survived were left in total poverty. On and on go the stories of danger and deprivation, of exile and bare survival. All because of their going public with their idealism and convictions as to what should be the nature and the destiny of human beings living together. Some of them were offered a way out of their troubles, offered amnesty, freedom, and restoration of their property. If they would be cooperative, if they would compromise and renounce the declaration that they had signed, but none of them wavered. They were saying that they were ready to do whatever was necessary to bring to life what they believed to be self-evident truth. What they referred to as inalienable rights that God had ordained for human beings. They were in this all the way to the end. That's why we call them patriots. But I want you to do something with me this morning. I want you to imagine that we were hearing this story for the first time. Hearing it as a current event. I wonder whether it wouldn't sound and feel quite different to us. Some of you might remember a news article, it was a number of years ago, about a group of students who printed the text of the Declaration of Independence at the top of a standard petition. And then they went out in the streets of our cities and they stopped people and asked them to read and to sign the petition. Well, it didn't go well. Amazingly, few recognized the Declaration of Independence as being that. Instead, it was seen as anti-American and treasonous. They were called all kinds of names, and in a couple of cases, they were threatened with physical violence. It made the point that there is much more appetite for patriots of the past who are safely dead and no longer disruptive than any boat rocking in the present. Fact is that original group of signers were mostly young men in their 20s or early 30s. They weren't long on experience. They were barely mature adults who should have been probably spending their time and energy getting vocations to support their young families and benefit their communities. But what were they doing instead? They were holding these clandestine meetings and writing and signing this inflammatory petition, which in effect called for revolution against grand old England. England, who had started, had facilitated, had nourished the development of their whole way of life. What kind of people would do such a thing? Sure, it's true that the government of England wasn't perfect. It was sometimes insensitive, it could be arbitrary at times, but does that make it okay for these young hotheads to mount these subversive, treasonous attacks on England? Would we have thought of them as patriots? I don't think I would. Instead, I might have suggested to them something like we've all seen on bumper stickers, the British Empire, love it or leave it. Now that's what smacks of patriotism, isn't it? These patriots were radicals by almost any definition. They were so radical that they actually believed that one could establish decency and order and stability apart from those tried and true traditions and principles of the British way of life. Yes, these young leftists actually believed that they were wise enough and knowledgeable enough to create a whole new approach to being a nation. They were such fuzzy-minded dreamers that they imagined it would be a good idea to allow the most common, the most unwashed people actually to have a voice in how they should be governed. And most dangerous of all, they were such extremists that they saw the overthrow of British rule as a reasonable strategy in getting their way with all these controversial ideas. You know, many of their contemporaries didn't agree with them. There were many who were very upset with Great Britain, but refused to have anything to do with this declaration. Many devout Christians, our forebears, also vigorously opposed the declaration and the thinking behind it. And you know what they did? They quoted Scripture, the 13th chapter of the book of Romans, in support of their objection. Let me remind you what Barry just read. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. Therefore, whoever resists authority resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. It turns out, then, that true patriotism might not, at least at the time, look and sound or feel the least bit patriotic. So the question we need to look at is, how then did theirs end up being so powerfully right? Such a remarkable blessing in human history. What set them and their passionate patriotism apart from that of the irresponsible, unstable fanatics or anarchists? What set them apart? A large part was their vision. An incredibly persistent, compelling hope for the future. The freedom of which they dreamed and upon which they insisted was freedom for something, rather than freedom from something. Now that's an extremely important distinction. If you listen, most freedom talk is that second kind, the self-centered kind. Freedom from worry, freedom from danger, freedom from responsibilities. Freedom from authority, from unwanted involvement. Freedom from having to care. Freedom from feeling obligated to give and the like. Now, there's nothing remotely noble about those. There was a Garfield cartoon a number of years ago, and in the first frame, the cat Garfield is looking in the window of the pet store. And there he sees all kinds of caged dogs and cats, and he decides to make them free. So, of course, Garfield dresses up as a freedom fighter. And he leaps into the store and he opens all the cages saying, you're free, go for it. And the dogs and the cats respond with only cringing and fear, clinging to the edges of their cages. Garfield's then shown thinking, these people are not very heavily into freedom. And the last frame shows him slamming shut those cage doors, and with the same gusto as moments before he had proclaimed their freedom, he's saying, you're safe. You're secure. All is back as it has been. Now that's comical. But it's unsettling too, isn't it? What the animals exercised was their glorious freedom to cling to their secure captivity, where they're protected, where they're coddled. Freedom in its most tragic expression. Unfortunately, there's always been a pretty large market for that darker kind of freedom. The freedom from having to change, the freedom from having to be responsible, the freedom not to care. In general, the freedom to vegetate. Let me try to illustrate another brand of this paranoid freedom. And it happened at a preschool where the teacher reported an incident having to do with a little song about popcorn that her preschoolers were learning. As they sang this song, they would crouch down on the floor with their arms folded and their head down until at a certain point in the song, like kernels of popcorn, they would pop up with their arms spread and their head thrown back. It was cute, and the kids loved it. But one morning, she noticed one little boy who seemed to be kind of in a bad mood all morning, remaining crouched down when it was time to pop up. After the second time through the song, she went and asked him why he didn't pop. And he replied, I'm that piece of popcorn that burns on the bottom of the pan. Something like that little boy's stance of burning on the bottom of the pan is routinely mistaken for patriotism. These so-called patriots burn on the bottom of the pan because changes in our life together that they don't like or understand. Or when the world or the nation takes a turn that they don't approve of. Or they're angry over the fact that people different from them are being tolerated and accepted. In fact, burning on the bottom of the pan becomes a permanent outlook. Whether it's because of all the terrible politicians or those minorities or those conservatives or the liberals or the feminists or the gays or the lawyers or the big business or the media, immigration, secularization. What is particularly bizarre is that they really believe that in their burning of the bottom of the pan is a legitimate kind of patriotism. It's as if the more things about the world and the life and the present time that I hate, the more it indicates that I love my country. Well, you know and I know that nothing could be further from being the truth. Patriotism, at least as lived out by those declarers of independence, is a vision. It's a hope for what can come to be. What can be brought to life out of this time and with the challenges that have been given to us? Nothing less than that. If they were willing to risk all that they owned and endure major hardship and endanger their families, face death, to create a kind of life together that would be so dynamic, so responsive that it would continue to renew itself, to reform itself, to recreate itself. in response to whatever we encounter as a country and as a people. And you know, they did a wonderful job of it. So God forgive us if the dream of those 56 men and the price they paid for dreaming it ever degenerates into something akin to those cage-loving animals. A nation of people for whom freedom mostly means a little more than the right to wallow in self-interest. That's not what we're about. Those are ugly freedoms. The poisonous ones. Obviously, we were created and our nation was conceived for something that's much deeper than that. So as we get that special feeling in the gut at this time of the year, give thanks for the vision of those forebears of our past that blessed our history. Let's do it thoughtfully. Looking inside ourselves to ask how free, how imaginative are our minds, are our spirits. For you know, when it comes right down to it, nations are not free. Not really. Only persons are free. It's my prayer, my hope, that you and I are among them.